Hi everyone, I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 10 of the Art Team Podcast. This week we have my friend Emily Reynolds back on to talk about the latest show she's curated at Bass and Rayner Gallery called Infinity Cove, which is currently up until October 29th. Emily also discusses the curatorial process behind Infinity Cove and how she came to learn about Leo Bieferman and Christine Yudi, whose work is exhibited in the show. In addition, since I'm a big sports fan and this past month also happens to be the start of the NFL season, I've decided to dedicate the last part of our conversation to sports. Emily, who happens to be a big football fan herself, shares what team she roots for and when her fandom began. We even discuss how sports and art can intersect. All right, well, before I give away anything else, here's our conversation. So this is the second podcast that I have you on. Mm-hmm. And so the last time we talked, you know, we ended it where we briefly talked about sports a little bit. We touched on that you do have an interest in sport. I guess, but the first thing before I want to ask you is, like, how's things going with YBCA? Because the last time I just saw you was, like, a week ago over at the Tom Sachs opening, which was really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, things are going super well. The Tom Sachs show has been an insane project to work on and so much fun and so challenging. And it's, lots of people came last weekend, which was our goal, basically. It was one of the biggest openings we've ever had at YBCA.
Yeah.
And, it's incredible to watch people respond to the show just in this first week that it's been open. It's, like, the first time we've ever had a show that kids are really into. Like,
yeah.
Lots of parents are bringing their, like, space-obsessed children, and that's really fun. And, yeah, it's just, like, it's a whole different kind of – I mean, every show at YBCA always feels so different from the last, but, this is an interesting new avenue.
Because I don't think – you know, when I interned there, I think – the last time there was a large-scale show like this was probably Band 7.
Yeah.
But this is so different because, like, mm-hmm. this is I think it was also the first time where all the spaces were used up for about one.
Yeah, I think the most similar thing was, like, long before either of our times was they had a Nick Cave show early thousands, I believe, or maybe mid-thousands, a little bit before Nick Cave had, like, really exploded. But, and that also had really high attendance and just, like, hit a nerve that it was the right time, the right show at the right time.
Yeah.
So we're hoping Tom Sachs will do the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. And they even saw, like, I guess NASA even made, like, a public statement or something about it. Which is really cool.
Yeah.
It's always a big deal when you get NASA to come out about to make a statement about an art show.
Yeah. In November we have a lecture coming up with a bunch of people who work at NASA and stuff too. So that's going to be really interesting. Like real space people, not just art space people.
Right. I think that was so funny was seeing the suits and how realistic they looked they looked real spacesuits, but it was made out of other materials that he bought. But
Tyvek money.
But I mean, just down to like the badges and the uniforms he had on like some of the people, I was impressed that he must have really retained a lot when he did that residency at NASA and really got it on the dial.
Yeah, well, and I think he's just like into NASA not just into NASA as an aesthetic, but like I think the investigation of the aesthetics of NASA are really interesting because they are real. Like NASA has good design and like actually. NASA's logos, the like difference between the meatball logo, which is the one that they're back to now.
Right.
And then the like actually the one that graphic designers tend to like more, which is the like wavy kind of NASA thing.
What do they call this, the worm or something like that?
Exactly. Yeah, it's really interesting. But NASA has like very serious aesthetics that are also very like tied up in nationalism and stuff that I think are interesting.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about Infinity Cove.
Yeah.
So that's the new show you have up at Bass and Rayner, mm-hmm. and you curated that show.
Yeah.
So when is it open till?
It's open till October 29th.
Okay.
So we still have about a month,
And that's usually how long you have the shows open for, like a month and a half about?
Yeah, we're usually doing 6 weeks. This one is a little bit longer just because of scheduling the next opening and stuff, and it's great to do it longer since we have work that's here from New York and stuff, better, longer chance for people to see it.
Yeah. And then the two artists who's showing is Leia Biefermann, and then Christine Yudi.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I was like, I hope I got that right. Like, that's the one name. I was just like, I have to practice this one.
Yep.
How did you hear about them?
Christine, I have known for a few years. We met in grad school, actually, when we were doing the Svika shows.
Oh, yeah.
I curated a show called Refraction that was at Lobot, and Lobot was like, I don't even think it exists anymore, but it was a collective where people lived. There were like studio spaces and apartments and a communal kitchen, and then this like giant warehouse space where they would put on like music shows mostly, but they also would do art shows from time to time. And so when we were like proposing Svika shows, people at CCA were like, oh, we should talk to Christine Yudi because she lives at Lobot and they have this giant space. And this show that I was talking about included a lot of like much bigger work. And so, yeah, Christine agreed to like host the show at Lobot. And that's when we first like met and started working together. So it was like not about her work at all. It was only about my work, but she was incredibly sweet and like sat there with me for we had 3 days of like 4 hour installs because I was like wrangling. I think there was like 12 artists in the show, they were all like dropping off stuff at different times and, you know, couldn't do one day. So I just had to have all these sort of open hours to let people drop off work. And yeah, she would just like sit there with me and let me have the space open while I just like waited for artists to not show up, yes, until the last minute was what always happens. So that was really fun. And yeah, we met that way. And then we started talking about her work and not even as much what she was making at the time, but just generally photography. And then soon after, she actually started working with Nando at Airbnb. And so we started to see more and more of each other. And she was in a show at City Limits that Stephanie Rolfs curated. And I saw her work there, and she had like just started to kind of pivot her work in a big way from more typical photography work into the realm of sculpture, really. And I loved it. There was like this piece where there was I can't remember if it was a frame or a piece of glass or what it was, but it was against a wall with just a corner, and the corner was holding up a picture of a flower. And it was like there was this sort of delicacy and concern that things would fall over or something. I'm always so affected by anything that like makes me fearful, or like any of that art that has this bodily effect on my body. So I was like in love with that immediately. And yeah, so her name became this like name in my mind that I really wanted to do a show with at some point. And I think we did a studio visit, but I actually can't even remember if we did a studio visit before I approached her about the show. But so I knew her work really well. And then last fall when we were working on building out the shows that we wanted to do for this year at Boston Rainer, I had been like spitballing with Nando about show ideas. And one idea that I had was like looking at photographers who were not really doing photography anymore. Yeah. And so Nando threw out a bunch of names, and Leah Biefermann was one of the ones that he threw out. I don't know where he had seen her work, probably on Instagram or something. And so I started like researching her a little bit more and was really interested in her work. She had a great interview that Lucas Blaylock interviewed her for Bomb Magazine. And I like read about how she was really interested in density and space. And space is one of my like forever issues that I'll always be really interested in. But she was like interested in space in this like very scientific way that was really like foreign to what my sort of approaches to space had been. So yeah, I started to read about her and look at a lot of her work. and then reached out, and we did a Skype studio visit last, like, January, maybe even earlier. Actually, it must have been in, like, November, because I ran into Rawson Projects at Miami, in Miami, and they had already done that show. So, yeah, it must have been a while ago. Yeah, and then we kept talking, and finally I was like, they make sense together. They both, yeah, have this, like, background in photography, but are not doing that anymore. And so that was the, like, very loose curatorial idea. And then as the show approached and I started doing more studio visits with both of them and talking about what they were currently working on, the show kind of came together, and we actually had talked two times with all three of us on Skype and went through all of their ideas, what they were thinking. Leah's work was pretty much done at that time, but Christine is more of a, like, fluid worker who will be still changing things up to the day the show opens. So Christine got to, I think, respond a little bit to what Leah was thinking about. And, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned about the photographic aspect, right, of, like, what they're slowly moving away from that.
And yeah.
There's a little bit of it, but it's, like, not really the focus of their work really anymore. But this is the second show you've done that is the same, like, as of an artist who traditionally a photographer, but then slowly kind of veering away, making it a little bit more conceptual than your traditional printed photograph in a frame on the wall.
Yeah, I think that that's one of our kind of interests at Boston Rainer. Ivan Iannoli, who is who you're referring to, is someone who we have been, watching for a long time and have all felt really interested in this sort of photography, but not photography, vein. And it also, Ivan was our very first solo show, and one of the things that we have struggled with it to, like, figure out how we reconcile doing solo shows is maybe it's okay for us because it doesn't perfectly fit within our original mission to do solo shows if they relate to another show. If there's if it's a longer discussion that we're sort of trying to build.
Yeah.
And so that was how Ivan's show perfectly ties in with, Christine.
So where did you come up with the name Infinity Cove? How that relates to both Leah and Christine's work?
That is a good question. So I actually did not come up with the name myself at all. when I was doing a studio visit with Christine, she showed me her piece within the show that's called Infinity Cove. And the piece is like a piece of paper that is stuck into the wall. So she like slits into the wall and paper... just inserts into it.
Yeah.
And one side says infinity and the other side says cove. And I was just very taken by the phrase. I had no idea what an infinity cove was or anything, but I was like, oh, that's a really interesting piece. Okay. And then, very soon after that studio visit, she and Leah were talking on Skype with me and, they both started talking about infinity coves, and I was like, what is an infinity cove? I'm not familiar with this. And they explained, and then I Googled pictures of the perfect white sort of dome that makes something look like nothing, basically, right, that makes this infinite space behind. And I was like, oh my God, that's exactly what this show is. Obviously. And that was why they both were grasping onto it. And once I okay, that's the show. That's the name.
In a show like this where, the work is kind of similar, but obviously they have whatever their motivations for the work is a lot different from each other. How is it working with both those artists and getting them on the same page to do something, to do where you're exhibiting both? Because I'm assuming at one point one of them is kind of like, well, mine's different, a different message than what that person is doing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's one of the... Yeah, they're so different. And it's a little challenging because with Leah, the concerns that we had were more about whether or what she would send, right? Mm-hmm. She has been working on work for a multitude of things. And the bigger question was if she could produce new work, that then she could ship more easily than old work that was already made. And it was less about like, what is the deep meaning of these photographs or these images? It was more about like, how are we getting these here? What's the easiest? How are we going to produce these on time? But those, you know, those are like really important considerations when you're curating as well. So she had just worked on all this stuff from a residency or two residencies. She did one in Utah and one in Iceland. And so the Utah stuff and the Iceland stuff was all coming together, and it had this completely different color palette than things that she had worked on before. And she was really interested in these dye sublimation prints, which is a different way of printing than she usually does. But they're printed directly on aluminum, so they're cheaper to ship. And we were like, great, let's do those. We'll get those out here. There's only four of them. So that was kind of like well decided a few months ago. And then Christine has had a couple pieces in her studio for a long time that are changing, and we pulled those because they made sense. We were interested in, when space kind of arose as like a thing that they were both interested in, and Christine in a very like physical way where she's both playing with space but also referencing architectural space, especially interior design and stuff. Yeah. And Leah is looking at space in this like really physical, geographical, and landscapey way.
Yeah.
But it made sense to put them all together.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You seem very interested I mean, we've talked about this even in grad school, the idea of space and using that space and how. So talk a little bit more about that, because I'm going to assume you're going to be doing way more shows that kind of deal with this topic that you're very interested in.
Probably.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for me, it's like anything. I think I'm most easily attracted to sculpture because sculpture always has this spatial element and has this bodily affection that it affects your body in this way that other mediums don't necessarily always.
Yeah.
And that's one of my interests in curating, is making a show that somehow affects people's bodies. But yeah, this is the first time that I've found that as much with a flat object on the wall. And one of the great things about Leah's work is the way that they really like draw you in. So in the show, there's this amazing sort of push-pull between Christine's work that is a little scary to get too close to because it's all very like balanced and leaning and kind of like trying to fall over. And Leah's work that's on the wall that just sort of like the colors are so rich that they just suck you in.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about that.
What is this, your third show you've done so far? At Minnesota Street?
Minnesota Street.
Or your second?
This is the second one that I've, taken the lead on.
Mm-hmm. Do you already have one in the works?
I don't. This is the first time that I don't have something specific already, like, lined up for the next one.
Yeah.
I have a bunch of artists that I want to work with, and so we're still figuring out exactly which ones and when, but I think my next thing will probably be a solo show instead of a group thing with sort of a less specific sort of curatorial aim until the next idea.
Yeah. So definitely it's harder than to come up with an idea or a theme that like more than one artist that, you know, if you're doing a group show to get them kind of on board with and kind of like saying, oh, this is our similarity or here's the similar element in our work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I try to avoid is just sort of being like, oh, I really like this artist. What would look good with it? Or like what thematically makes sense even. I want for me doing a two-person or bigger group show, like I need it to click in a more serious way.
And it sounds like, so it's not even just you, so it sounds like the other three like co-directors with you like kind of have input too or kind of give you feedback like, yeah, I think that'd be great for the space.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And with this show, the original pairing was my idea. The others always are the people in the background saying, like, why, defend this decision, which is great. That's what you need. And then also then when you get to the like nitty gritty helping with the things that you need help with. Yeah, exactly. So thank God they're there.
Yeah. Is it, how's been that space then? How's Bass and Rainer been so far? I mean, how many, you guys have done 5 shows, right? 4 maybe?
Hunker Down, Claya's, Ivan's. This is our 5th, yeah.
Yeah.
So, it's good. Summer was incredible for us. We had a really, really good and busy summer. And fall is shaping up well so far. The other programming that they're doing in there has been really interesting.
Yeah.
Right now they have an Artadia show of people who've gotten the Artadia Fellowship before. And then also Glenn Helfand is curating this After Pop Life show that's about Prince. And
it's
very interesting. Yeah. So there's like always cool stuff happening. We're really excited to see what happens at Minnesota Street during Untitled in Untitled is the one in January. So that's like the 2nd week of January. We are working on a show that's trying to take advantage of obviously having all these people in town for this new fair. Maybe having all these people, we'll see. Yeah. Trying to strategize how to best use that weekend of like increased arts activities and how we're gonna bring people into our space and get them to buy stuff.
Yeah. Well, the selling part, has that been good too on your end?
Yeah.
I mean, because the Ivany and Noli show, I mean, you guys were like,
that one did really, really well. Yeah. And the book show this summer did really, really well. This one we know is the show that I did, Infinity Cove, is definitely a little bit of a less, I don't want to say like less commercial, but it's harder to. It's just not going to be as commercial.
Right.
We like just know it's not as viable, but we feel that that's, you know, it's a balance. It's a,
and why is that? Because of the type of work that they have? You feel like,
it's hard to convince. Christine's work is like big. There's two of these, the window panes are like, it's hard to imagine someone who, I hope that there are people out there, but it's hard to, we're like, ugh, we don't really have connections to this collector right now who wants this kind of piece. Maybe we will someday. We hope we do. We're hope maybe they'll just wander in, but we just have less of the connections for people who are going to buy that kind of thing. Leah's work seems infinitely more, you know, it still goes on the wall. It's very like normal in that way. But it also, she's not a familiar name here, so people are, like, less just sure of her, haven't seen her name as much, though I will not be surprised if, like, in the next few years, people start seeing her name a lot more in the, like, broader scheme of the whole art world, so hopefully someone will make a smart decision and get it now. Yeah.
I always wondered about that when I see big artwork, or, like, man, you really have to find a buyer who's really into, like, you know, we talk about the Fishers.
Yeah.
The Fishers owned, like, that Sarah piece that's, like, humongous. Yeah. And I always wonder, like, where the hell do you put that thing?
Exactly.
But they bought it. They were interested
they
in it.
Yeah. They probably put it in storage or something. Yeah. Honestly, maybe they had it out, but.
And I don't know how much this is true. So, you've heard of Attel Fine Arts.
Mm-hmm.
So, the academy where I work at works with Attel Fine Arts because that's where we have our archive currently stored off site. I was at their offices here in Oakland, which is nearby actually, and they, we were just gossiping and talking about the S of MoMA.
Yeah.
And they were storing all of like his stuff before they moved it to S of MoMA.
Yeah.
And we talked about the Richard Serra piece and pieces like that. And some lady that worked in the office came out and was like, oh, I know about the Fishers. And said some random story about that. They owned a piece that was really large, obviously couldn't fit it on their house or their property, so they loaned it to, like, a place.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Well, and they had it there, and I said, and it's one of the pieces at this MoMA now.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think about that. It's you really have to find somebody who's willing to do that, who loves their work so much.
Yeah, that they're going to, support it in this way by buying something that is, hard to imagine in your living room.
Yeah. Well, and even crazier is that, you know, especially these days, a lot of times what makes a piece popular is how much exposure it gets on the public market, right?
Yeah.
And a public auction and how many people buy it. And it sucks because that's what people consider like, oh, that's a good piece because it has all this visibility. But then pieces, you know, like Christine and Leia's work, nobody will hear of them yet because it's not been sold and passed around to all these different galleries and auction houses. And it doesn't mean that their work isn't good. And, you know, it's just that the people came in and like, I really love this piece. I want to buy it. Yeah. I just don't know where I would put it. And really dependent on that, right?
Like, this, I mean, it is the, like, the biggest part of working with emerging artists is that, they don't have a, they don't have cred. They don't have, like, an auction or a record of sales even. I mean, it's one of the things that you learn quickly is that artists don't want the amount of money that other sales are done public at all. And you just don't, you don't talk about how much things sell for or sold for because there's like not a clear history yet. Once you get into auctions, people start establishing a value, but like value is very difficult to define up until then. And it's basically what the artist needs to survive. So it's interesting working with emerging artists and figuring out where to price things and finding the people. It's finding the right people, finding the people who are supporters. And we have a couple of people who come into the gallery frequently and who have bought work that I would never imagine anyone would buy. I'm always like, but I'm so grateful to them, and they do it because they support emerging artists and they really like the work, and someone has to do it early. Someone has to.
Is that something you work with the artist, like determining like what you price the work as? Like, so is it more of like they give you an idea of how much they think it's worth, and then you kind of work with them and like, well, maybe this is a little bit more realistic?
Exactly. We actually, it's frequently the opposite. It's frequently us saying you're undervaluing yourself. You need to go higher for many reasons, but also just because if you sell something low and people know that you sold it low, then they think that you don't, that your work, art isn't worth anything, you know, like these like monetary values are such like a, they just determine what the value is. And because we do have a price sheet that is out and people can see it, because we want to encourage people who think that all art is out of their price range to see that it's at a multitude of price ranges and you could afford it if you like wanted to, maybe, or if you were interested in it. You should just, I think you should just be able to know and not have to like ask someone and if you're afraid. But yeah, because it is like a public, a list that is available, if people can see these prices, then that becomes something that people have seen before and know like, oh, that's only this much.
Yeah.
Or that is that much. Oh my God. It's a, it's so weird.
Well, I'm guessing you're learning a lot too, like running Bass Rain, or like how much that side of the business works.
And kind of like start to get into a sweet spot. We, for one of our shows, we had a artist who made really big work that's really, really great. But this was like early on when we were in our old space, and we did a thing one night where we were like, okay, we're all going to write down what we think each piece should be. So we, there was, it was like the four of us plus the artist there that day. And so we all wrote down our like, okay, I think this is worth X. And then we would like open everybody's little sheet of paper and be like, whoa, because the spread was ridiculous, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's really, it's a hard, it's a weird world. It's a weird world. It is not just completely like random like that. There's so many things that you have to think about with it. But yeah, Clea and I typically are like on opposite ends of the spectrum of where we think things go. So we usually sit the different.
That's funny. Well, great. I haven't yet seen this, unfortunately, but I plan on doing it. That's good to hear. It's open till October.
It's open for a bit.
Yeah, so I got to go drive down to the Dog Patch and do that.
Yeah.
I owe a visit to the Minnesota Street Project.
Yeah.
I've gone a little bit
There's
since
a
the summer.
Good shows up right now, too.
Yeah.
So, all of the other galleries have good stuff up. So.
Yeah, which is great for you guys because it creates more traffic towards your...
Yeah.
And, you know, I think I was there one day, like on a Saturday, but Chris was manning the, which he always is. By the way,
it's,
I know
he really, it's like supposed to be like a, not a punishment to do Saturdays, but like we're supposed to take turns, but I haven't done a Saturday in a long time, which is also fine with me because Saturdays are definitely like the highest traffic day.
Yeah.
And Chris is so good at talking to people and I'm like, I'm very good. I can do it, but I mean, I have like lots of experience doing it, but I also just like, it's very draining for me, and Grunder is like totally opposite.
Well, and on top of that, when you, the job you do Monday through Friday also requires you to talk to a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly.
So, like by Saturday, you're kind of like, I just want to not talk.
Yeah, exactly. Grunder's job is like sitting in front of a computer in an artist's studio. So he needs to talk.
And he's good. Like, I was very, and you're right, Saturday seemed to be the busiest because every time I go, which is on a Saturday, I'm very surprised of how many people come in and out of just your space.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris is always engaging somebody.
That's one of our, I think that's one of the, it's one of the things we get the most, like, emails and stuff about after is people who are just really thankful that we do engage every single person and to the extent that they want to be engaged, but we always, like, at least try to talk to them. And especially for a show like this where we are showing work that's a little bit more difficult and, you know, people see something sitting on the ground and might immediately be like, I don't get this at all. I don't like it. But if we sit there and like talk to them a little longer, they're still probably not going to buy it, but they might be interested.
I witnessed that one time and it was, what show was it? It's the stuff with the, like the weights and the chains.
Oh,
like,
the first one.
The very first one. Yeah. And, it was so funny because there was somebody who came in and you can tell that they're like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah, it's always my shows. I'm always the one that people are like, what is that?
Yeah.
But then I hope that, we can be like, well, let's think harder about this. Right.
Let's work together on this.
Yeah, exactly.
And I saw Chris notice that and he goes, give me a second, Lewis. And then goes and explains. And they're like, oh, yeah, I get it. Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. And
sometimes they still hate it, but at least they like are starting to like,
But that's good, though, because I feel like I've been to other art galleries and nobody really does that. Like, nobody really engages you. They kind of just let you be. And if you don't get it, then that's on you.
Yeah.
And sometimes I kind of do want somebody to explain to me, why is this weird?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And sometimes hearing the explanation makes me appreciate it.
Or like,
it
we
more.
Agree, this is weird.
Right, exactly. Even hearing that, it is weird, but here's why it's weird.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And so I think that's great. And I mean, it's like adding like a docent aspect to an art gallery, which normally doesn't really have that, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't really have like the docent, like educational side of it.
Well, and some people like totally do not want that. And I think that's all just reading people, which we're getting pretty good at. Like, sometimes people come in, you've only said hello to them and they buy something. And you're like, wow, okay, that person really didn't want me to talk to them. That's good. But other people, need a handhold. And that's great too. We can hold hands.
Well, great. All right. So now let's switch over to the next topic. I know, I can hear the Fox Sports like music playing in the back. So as I mentioned before, last time, you know, we mentioned you're a football fan and actually not just a football fan, you are a sports fan in general. And
yeah, I would say that.
Yeah.
I enjoy sports.
Right.
And not every sport. I don't like baseball much.
Yeah.
But I do. I like sports in general as a concept. I'm interested in them. Yes.
Yeah. And you are a Bronco fan, a Denver Bronco fan.
Yes.
And being from Colorado, that's like the norm. By the way, actually borderline religion, because when I went to undergrad, I was on, my lacrosse team was made up, half the guys were from Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And I kid you not, all of them lived together. They all hung out together. And when I went to a house that they all lived in, I walked in and literally everything was the color orange and blue.
Uh-huh.
There was the banner of the Colorado State flag and stickers everywhere that said...
The Colorado flag is a really good flag.
Right.
We have to like...
It's really
from
impressive.
A design perspective, it's one of the best.
Yes, I am jealous of that. Yeah, and it has the big C on it.
Yeah,
I mean, it's really good.
It's a really good flag.
And, but my favorite thing, and I think like... Every Colorado person I've met at one point has either said this to me or I see it around in their house. How is God not a Bronco fan if sunsets are always orange which
blue.
Is
yes.
orange and blue?
Yes. God must be a Broncos fan or he wouldn't have made sunsets orange and blue. Yes, that is a popular bumper sticker saying
and
phrase in general.
And so for anybody in our audience who's not a football fan, you know, the Broncos, the Denver Broncos, is the football team of of Colorado, basically.
It's like more than Colorado, too, though, because it's the only NFL team in a like much bigger radius.
Right, because like Wyoming,
Arizona is the next one.
For sure, yeah. And I know a lot of people from Wyoming are Bronco fans.
Mm-hmm. Kansas, Nebraska. Yeah. We pull from more than just Colorado.
Yeah, so. And but the reason why I want to talk a little bit about football, because I thought it would be great, topically great, since this month is the first month of the football season. September is the month that football kicks off.
We're still undefeated, too.
Yeah, yes, and we'll talk about that. So then, for the first thing I want to ask was, how long have you been into sports?
So I have always been into sports in some, right? I grew up swimming, and I've always been, like, an Olympics fan. I think I've always enjoyed watching some kind of sports, but football has not always been something that I've been interested in. My parents were not that into football, actually. Like, I think my dad has gone through phases and been on and off, but my brother started playing in middle school, as is kind of typical in Colorado. And so he started playing, and then my dad started watching with him, and then my mom started watching, and then I was like, well, I guess I'm going to watch this too.
Yeah.
But I was actually still kind of the mind of like, football's dumb. It's not for girls, so I don't watch it or something.
Yeah.
So it was like, actually, then in high school, I like went through a phase where I did start watching it pretty regularly. I still was not really engaging in it. I wasn't necessarily thinking it was cool. I wasn't thinking about it at all, but it was just on, and I was like, fine, whatever. If everybody's going to be watching this, I'll watch this too. I definitely watched the Broncos a lot in the era of John Elway and stuff. Yeah. Like, those were games were always on, but I...
John Elway, who's a god and
yeah, exactly, Colorado. But it was like... And that was... Now the Broncos are like more of a culture than in Colorado, even if you don't watch football, you know who the Broncos are.
Well, and historically the Broncos sucked for a long time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, John Elway, who was the quarterback, I think through the early 80s through the late 90s, I think, he went to 3 Super Bowls and lost. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like he was considered, like, he was like one of the greatest, winner, you know? And then randomly in the last 2 years of his career, he wins 2 Super Bowls, which is what really brings the rise to like Denver being this really great sports town.
Well, and now he's the general manager, of course.
Right.
And he is like the one who, over and over, it seems like, has continued to make the Broncos a success afterward. Like, he really is an institution.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's great.
So you really, like, so probably, like, college then, and, like, late college, like, college years, you started to really...
And then, like, actually, when I moved to San Francisco is when I really, really started watching football. I had two friends, like, some of my first two friends here who were non-art friends would, like, invite people over to watch football every weekend, and they were Saints fans, and... So I would go and watch the Saints games with them, and then, like, they'd be like, oh, let's turn on the Broncos game. And I'd be like, yeah, let's turn on the Broncos game. I think it also became something, like, when I'm not at home, when I'm not in Colorado, it's more, like, a reminder of, like...
If you're home.
Oh, yeah, it's a little nostalgic.
Yeah.
So that's, like, another part of it. And, of course, my brother is a really big sports fan.
Yeah.
Like, and all the sports stuff that I know is because my brother is like an encyclopedic sports fan.
And I met him one time, and he was awesome. Like, I mean, he knew, I'm from San Diego, and I'm a San Diego sports fan. He knew a lot about San Diego sports, and I was like, this guy's fucking awesome.
I don't know, like, what his brain does differently, but he can, and I sometimes... My mom and I joke, like, it would be great if he could apply this to a different, something that might, like, make him money. Or stocks and bonds, perhaps. But no, he is a sports fan, and he just knows everything about sports from long before he was born to up to today. He knows everything about baseball, even though he doesn't watch baseball.
Yeah,
I think he just, like, reads a lot of blogs or something and puts names in
his
mind. it's really pretty amazing. And so... Yeah, then when I started, like, watching football regularly and kind of spending weekends watching, like, game after game after game, being a Broncos fan, but also, like, watching everything else, and then it's, like, a great way, like, now I talk to him, like, we talk on the phone for, like, an hour sometimes, just sports, just Broncos talk, let's just get in there.
Yeah,
it's become a thing that,
Well, it's definitely, it sounds like something that it's a good way for you to keep with your brother too, to keep in touch. Yeah. And mm-hmm. like, it's definitely something.
And then my mom and dad will get into it too. And then like everybody else in Colorado. And yeah, it's, it is, it's like, this like the football is family stuff is so cheesy, but it also is like a weird, there's a hint of truth there. And I'm not going to say that everything about that is good, but there's like, there is something, it's a culty thing.
It really is.
It's like a,
Well, and I think it's
one of your soul and then you're in it.
Well, and I think about, I think of all the sports of baseball, basketball, like they're all like American institutions, but football for some reason for me has always been the sport where like, you can go on your entire life not knowing anything about it, but then in 1 year you pick it up.
Yeah, you can pick it up really fast. You can start to get, especially if you're focused on one team. And yeah, like I don't do fantasy. I keep thinking about maybe doing fantasy, but like right now,
you will,
like,
you will have no life.
Yeah, like, I know.
As I don't have a life.
Yeah.
I do it. Yeah.
Well, and it's definitely gotten worse. Like for me, it was like, okay, well, I started like, okay, every week I watch the Broncos game, but now I'm like, okay, every week I watch the Thursday night game,
right.
Games all day Sunday and Monday because I need to see what all the other teams are doing so I can see how the Broncos are going to do when they have to play them or whatever.
Yeah,
it's like getting bigger.
Well, you know, the last person, one of the last people I talked to was Gabe Edwards,
right? Yeah.
The latest. And
hockey fan, big hockey fan.
Huge hockey fan.
I've never gotten into hockey.
Near have I. And since I've been in and Bay Area, people seem to be really into hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm slowly catching on to it only because of that.
Yeah.
But Gabe, you know, talked to me, asked me briefly about sports. And then he explained to me, yeah, I don't really know much about football. I never really got into it. And the one thing I mentioned to him was, you know, and the same thing with you. My parents, they didn't play football. They didn't know anything about football. And they didn't know and care about it until I started playing football.
Yeah, I was going to say, you probably played.
And then my brother played. And my sister, of the entire family, my sister is like 5 years younger than me, is like the fanatic.
Yeah.
Like, she's the one that's just like loses her mind.
Yeah.
And, like, and it was, I told Gabe, you know, one of the things I think about football, too, is that you unless you have an actual motivation to watch it, that's the only reason you're in it. But once you watch it, you're hooked.
Yeah. Well, and I guess I totally skipped over the whole part where, like, I went to middle school in a small town that had a, it was a middle school and high school combined.
Yeah.
And so every Friday night was, everybody went to the football games.
Yeah.
And I started, I mean, I was like, I knew everybody on that high school team. I like knew all of their positions and stuff. So I like, I really was aware of how to play football and stuff at a younger age. And I was into it then. And then, yeah, in high school, it just became this thing of like, oh, I was like too cool for sports. But then it turns out that I was never too cool.
My girlfriend, Steph, was a cheerleader in high school.
Yeah.
Captain of the cheerleading team.
Uh-huh.
Squad.
Still didn't.
Cares. I'm barely trying to get her into football.
Yeah.
Like, does know nothing about it. And it surprises the hell out of me. It's
like, what were you doing during How did you know when to cheer?
Exactly.
You don't
like, 4 years of a cheerleader. Like,
she did the basketball games.
Yeah, and I think she dated a football player, too, which is even hilarious.
Yeah,
has no idea.
Yeah.
And I don't think she understood my fanaticism until she started dating me.
Yeah.
But it's definitely interesting way to get into it, and and yours is very, I think, very similar to a lot of different people who, like, I you know, and for me, like, I was always a football fan, but my fanaticism didn't reach that high point until literally the last 4 years, and actually since I moved here, and funny, the same thing as you, I did it because it was my only way of keeping in touch with my hometown.
Yeah, it's something to talk about with the people that you see when you go home for Christmas and stuff, too.
Absolutely.
You're like, okay.
Yeah.
Especially when you get real deep into this art stuff and people have no idea what you're talking about when you go home and they're like, what are you doing? And you're like, let's talk about the Broncos. We got this and we can keep this. And it's, I don't know. It's like, it's good to stay somewhere in the real world too. Sometimes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you know, I have this belief where, you know, sports, I think of any sport is like the one thing that once you get talking to people, you could be a machinist and then a lawyer, and you get them together, and if they help both happen to be the fans of the same team, those, like, class differences and those, like, work, like, pay differences that they have completely disappears.
Yeah.
They're only talking about the Jets. They're going to argue.
They're still, there's still going to be arguments. That's one of the other things that I think is very interesting about football is I'm sort of like a, I love everything the Broncos do sort of fan, whereas, like, other people are like, I can't believe they're making this decision all the time. I guess I'm, like, a very, like, in Elway we trust sort of person. I'm like, listen, maybe during different things, and I've questioned decisions for sure, but, like, people are like, we got to take Simeon out right now. He's not doing good enough offense. And I'm like, hold on. I think we've won both games that we've been in. We don't have, like, real other viable options. So let's just be nice to Trevor Siemian and let him play. Right. He's doing fine.
Right. And which is a good segue into the next part. So today. So I'm a San Diego sports fan.
Yeah.
I'm a Charger fan. And
yeah, sorry, Beth.
I know. It's all right.
It's not their year.
You know, they're okay right now. I haven't gotten to panic mode, but the Chargers, San Diego Chargers seem to be that team that has always the potential.
Yeah, everybody's then, like, Phillip Rivers, he's a real franchise
quarterback.
He's going to
do it. This is the year.
He's so great.
And then they blow it somehow.
Yeah.
And, you know, so far we've had two injuries of two of our stars who have both torn their ACLs out of the season.
Yeah.
And that's not the first time in the history of the last 20 years where something like that has happened. And I tell my family and my friends that we can't have nice things. My life growing up as a Charger fan will be the title of my memoir, like, one day, because I'm just so tired of where, like, every year this is going to be it.
Yeah.
And something bad happens.
And something bad happens.
But we are technically rivals because in the division that we play, it's Kansas City, Oakland, where you live.
I love the Raiders. They're my second favorite team.
I respect them, but I hate them with all my guts.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like by being a Broncos and a Raiders fan, it's like actually impossible. And as to a Bronco, to somebody in Colorado, they would be like, no, that can't happen.
And the fourth team in this division is the Denver Broncos.
Yeah.
And the last 5 years or so, the Broncos have been the dominant team.
Yes.
You guys had the
first. So the Chiefs are always on our tail.
Yes, everybody's, they're always the annoying.
Whenever, like a commentator is talking about, it's always like, well, the Chiefs are really the best in that. And we're like well, hello.
Right.
We're the only one that ever wins the division, but the Chiefs are really better than us.
Right, right.
I don't know.
Yes, always. And I think that goes back to what you were mentioning about, like, where the fans of that specific team. For them, they either are ardent critics of their team, but will support them nonetheless.
Yeah.
Or just, like, they're the people who think their team can do never any wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the Kansas City fans constantly thinking, "Oh, we're the best. We're the best.
We're the best.
Of course,
we're the best.
Why are we not the best?
We fooled all the commentators into thinking we're the best.
Right.
We're just the best.
Right.
No one can name.
Right.
I can name their quarterback.
They haven't won a Super Bowl. They haven't won a playoff game in a long time. And it's
exactly.
Like, so meanwhile, the Broncos once again are dominating. And you've had the fortune, and we've talked about this in grad school, where I think this was like the best part about it was I'm brand new to the school. I walk in the school, and maybe like it's now football season, it's the fall. I'm like walking in, and I see you walk in with your Denver Broncos shirt. I'm like, oh crap! And like, and then we talked a little bit, and I think it got to a point where you're just every day you were like, oh, did you see Peyton Manning last night? Like, he was really great, right? And I was like, yes, he was great.
Yeah,
yes. Yeah, he was really great. Well, you mentioned one time that you recently did a sports podcast, right, or something like that, or you?
No, I have a sports show. I did a sports show, once. Actually, also part of Speaka. I did two shows for that sort of series of shows. The one in Sports Basement, which it was a fine show. It was a good show. It was interesting.
Yeah,
it was my first sort of like foray into like sports art.
Yeah, like explain that to me, because I'm still kind of, I wouldn't say skeptical, but like
or
suspicious of
certainly
the combination of the two.
Quite a few artists. So, like, Reese Bambrick was in that show, who went to SFAI, who has been making... He had made this, like, football encaustic thing.
Yeah.
He's really interested in exploring, like, masculinity through sports. I think that kind of tends to be the, like, the grain there that people grasp onto is, like, this masculinity. But also play. I think there's a lot of artists who are working with, like, playing and games and kind of the like human's desire to do that sort of thing. So that's kind of, I think, what Josh Stulen does. Those are two of the artists that were in it. Ileana Tejada, who also, and she is like a weightlifter herself, and then also
and she was a shot putter at Cal Poly.
Yeah, that's right. And she like paints herself doing a lot of like physical activities and stuff. So
in the nude.
Yeah. And they're gorgeous paintings. Yeah. So those were like three of the artists. I can't even remember everybody who was in that, and I'm sure someone is going to be mad at me for forgetting. But that was kind of like the start, and that was just easily like, oh, we've got a bunch of artists who like are working with sports. There wasn't really any like deeper thing there. But I have been working for the past like 2 years on this larger project, we'll call it at this point. It's very like loose. I don't know what it is, but right after grad school, when I was like, oh my gosh, I have all this time and I can read any book that I want to now. Yeah. It's like the first time in my life that I can just read whatever I want to read. I don't have to feel bad about it. So I had really been wanting to read Into Thin Air by Jon Krakauer.
Okay.
For a long time. I really loved Under the Banner of Heaven. I read that in high school back when I was also allowed to read books that I liked on my own. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to read Into Thin Air. And it like, I got obsessed with Mount Everest for like, that led me down a like rabbit hole of maybe like 10 to 15 different books about Mount Everest.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I have read a lot about like various Mount Everest expeditions. Yeah. I've also watched every documentary on Netflix and everything. Like, I've just like gone through it, and it's just something I just find really interesting. Alpinism is in general and mountain climbing. Last year when we went to Switzerland, we got to go to Zermatt and see the Matterhorn. And I was just like reading the gravestones of every climber there because I was like, I know those names now. I've like been doing enough of this that I'm starting to like really like get a handle on the history of like climbing. But I also, whenever I do anything, I have to start thinking about like, okay, what is this? Why am I interested in this? And like, does it have any bearing on then my like professional like things? What am I doing outside of this like really intense interest that I have in some very specific thing? So I've been starting to think about how alpinism and this sort of sport plays in art. And actually, it's pretty obvious at the beginning because like the sublime like landscapes like Friedrich and stuff were kind of coming to rise at the exact same time as British alpinism, this like idea of like exploration, and we have to get to the top of these mountains. And that's a super masculine urge to see this like sublime thing of the earth and everything. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff to kind of pick apart there. And then there's also like documentary photographers who are on all of these like trips that no one knows. People do know their names, but they're not like, it's just like today when you see an Everest documentary and there's people who are doing much harder climbing because they're also carrying a camera, but they're not sponsored climbers and stuff, so they're sort of not the star of the movie or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, we've had documentary photographers all the way back then.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also looking at artists right now who are dealing with mountains or imagery of mountains, like Ed Ruscha, I think, is an interesting one. He always has these mountain, not always, but frequently uses these mountain backdrops.
Yeah.
Or I've been interested in Hamish Fulton, who does like walkabout. He's like the walking photographer. Do you know him?
No.
He is Welsh or British or something like that. And he, just like does these walkabouts where he takes pictures, but kind of trying to look at how what he's doing in the mountains whenever he goes on these mountain walks. And recently we saw a show in L.A. by Lutz Bacher. I've got name problems, too. called Mountain Magic. Yeah, Mountain Magic. And so, I'm just, like, trying to, like, bring together all of these, like, just sort of collect a bunch of artists who are working with mountains or climbing.
Yeah.
Oh, the most interesting one who I've reached out to for a studio visit and will maybe do someday is Taylor Reese, who's actually in this movie called Meru. It's a documentary about climbing Meru, which is another Himalayan peak, but it's much harder to climb, really, than Everest is. But he is a painter. Well, he paints. He's not a painter. He's a climber. Yeah. But he paints, and like they show him painting and stuff in the documentary. And the first time I reached out for a studio visit, they were like, we don't know. I was like, I'd like to do a studio visit. And they were like, I think his like wife maybe or someone responded. And she was like, we don't really have a studio. I don't know what you're talking about. I was like, oh my God.
Well, whatever space you have.
Yes, exactly. I want to look at the paintings that your husband makes. Can we? Sorry. Yeah. And yeah, so I'm like kind of trying to explore this in a way. And maybe someday it'll be a show. Maybe it'll be something else. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, and I think you're really going into, you're touching on something where you're looking at the artistic side of a sport, which in this case is climbing.
Yeah.
And I think the people who, I don't think, maybe unbeknownst to them, but their way of documenting the climbs, whether it's painting, documentary, like film, photo, that they're not realizing that that in itself is also an art form.
Yeah,
but you're recognizing, like, do you understand that, like, the way you're documenting it is really beautiful.
And and I think there's kind of two sides to it, because there's both the, like, the impulse of the person who's doing it to capture it.
Yeah.
And then there's also this, like, impulse of artists. Like, what is the strength of this mountain imagery? And it's something Nando really, like, rolls his eyes at me because I'm obsessed with those Coors ads. Yeah. That are like, have you seen the Coors ads?
Which one? With the bullet train going there?
No, they're just like these beautiful white mountains. Oh, yes. And they're like so strong. And then it's
Where's
just
Coors,
Coors,
Coors, Coors from again? I knew that. I just wanted to do this. Which is, I was going to mention earlier too, like, oh, really? Because the Colorado's interested in the mountains.
In the mountains, I know.
No, but no, that's cool.
Yeah, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. Every time I see that ad, I'm like, oh, it's so powerful. Is it just powerful to me? Or like, what is this?
Yeah.
What is this sort of... And I think that's the same thing that Ed Ruscha is doing when he's got those, his words on the mountains.
Right.
It's the same idea. There's something there.
Well, it's the same way with the most popular picture we always see of Ed Ruscha is of that gas station.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's where he, for some reason, found some beauty in a gas station.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody else, you know, like, I don't think a lot of people don't see that, but he saw it, and he was able to bring that out.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same way with you, where you, for some reason, really find the beauty in these mountains, whether it's in a commercial, in a film, in a painting, and it seems like you love how those specific people who made whatever that that object is, bringing it out in their
medium. Yeah. Well, and I think there's something, actually, that weirdly brings it back to my very the first show that I did for Boston Rainer at the Old Space, which was about, like, art that makes people feel small or big or, like playing with scale. But one of the things that I think is most powerful about being in the mountains is how small you feel. When you are next to a giant mountain, all of a sudden it sort of, like, brings you into this place of, like, I'm very small in this world. What is... I'm going to question myself. Like, they are a huge... thing that brings you into yourself, sort of this, like, geophysical formation that makes you then sort of start to think about your own body.
When you did that sports show a couple years ago with all the different artists that were doing in sports, was that also something that you were interested, you like were just fascinated by whatever that they were fascinated by? It, like, they were trying to bring out a beauty in something.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise, to the, any other normal person wouldn't think, well, is it really beauty that this lady weightlifting?
It's weightlifting. Like, I think it's that, like, moment of bringing attention to something people aren't really paying. I mean, they're paying attention to it, and, like, not millions of people watch football every week.
Right.
But some people are really thinking about why people watch football, but I think that, I mean, this is one of the things that art does, right, is it can take this thing that everybody's doing and then try to recontextualize it so that it starts to look in on itself.
You know, someone who really loves art, and then my other obsession is sports. And for up until recently, I've really kept the two pretty separate. I've used sports really as my palate cleanser.
Yeah.
I remember there was many times I'm in grad school and I'm learning about Foucault, I'm learning about all these different things.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I gotta, like, listen to something or read something, yeah, is completely different because, oh, yeah, I'm like off right now.
I listen to sports talk at work sometimes, yeah, because I'm like, this is something that's like so different from everything else that, yes, I'm talking about. And yeah, it's kind of nice.
And that's really when I really got into sports radio, sports, mm-hmm, talk radio, and like really looking at stats. And I mean, really, yeah, since the grad school was really the time where I really got real deep, yeah, like too deep sometimes, yeah, in the, yeah, sports. I've seen a lot of sports artists, you know, and a lot of times it's just a portrait of a guy throwing a football.
Yeah, it's like lip service.
They're right. Not into it. Exactly. They're not actually doing it. Yeah, and I've always been interested, like, there's got to be somebody who's going to figure it out, the other human aspect to sports, other than just the atypical teamwork and, yeah, perseverance, but like, yeah, something that other, like, whether it's the dark side, mm-hmm, of it, whether it's the, because a lot of times, if you talk to a lot of athletes, they'll give you, for the general part, like the typical, like, oh, got me out of the hood, that's why I do it. Oh, this is for my family, it's for my, yeah, family. But if you really get into it with them, if they're honest enough with you, they'll get into the part where emotionally why they really do it. Yeah. Like what they get out of it, mm-hmm, right? Like the rush, the, maybe they'll say it's the gladiator or like the actual, yeah, like something in them. And then this goes for women or men.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody has successfully done that yet, yeah, in an artistic way.
Should probably start. I do know a lot of climbers. I can't.
Yeah, they were, and that was the thing. Bring around the climbers.
I know a lot of climbers, yeah, so I guess I have talked, but I haven't really delved into that. But yeah, I know zero professional, right, sport.
But that's what it sounds like, is you seem to notice that their photo work and their video work, mm-hmm, and their painting is unbeknownst to them. They're actually bringing that out of, yeah, climbing.
Yeah.
And then I guess it's like wondering, when is that going to come out in the other more popular sports? Yeah. But that would be really cool to see. I think that would be really cool to see a show like that. Like, say, yeah, like about climbing. And
someday, maybe, yeah, Boulder, Colorado or something.
Yeah. Which would be like very perfect. Like, yeah, a perfect location, mm-hmm, for it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, someday. That's, yeah. Yep. I'll just keep collecting stuff. Someday it'll materialize into something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming on again. And
Can I plug the next show?
Oh, yeah.
So Infinity Cove ends October 29th. Mm-hmm. And then early November, I can't remember the exact date, opens the show that Marielle is organizing, Marielle Bayona. And it is Marcela Pardo Ariza, who went to SFAI and graduated a year or two ago. And Lorena Zertuche, who is an artist and interior designer who's like been working with a lot of Mexican restaurants and, ooh, stuff. Like, yeah, her work is really cool, and I'm really excited for it. And it's going to be, as usual, a completely different flavor, yeah, than what Infinity Cove is, where Infinity is Cove is cold and sort of gray. The show is called Habitos, and it is going to be bright and warm, and you've, yeah, got the opposite. So, yeah, I'm, yeah, excited about it.
Yeah, that's cool. That sounds, mm-hmm, good.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for this week. I just want to say that I love talking to Emily today, not only about her new show and some football, but of course, alpine climbing. And I want to thank her for enlightening me on such an obscure sport. Be sure to check out Infinity Cove, which is currently on exhibit at Bass Arena Gallery at the Minnesota Street Project. It will be open until October 29th, so don't miss your chance to see it. For past, present, and future shows, visit the Bass Arena website at bassandrainer.com or follow the gallery on Instagram or Twitter at bassandrainer. Okay, till next time, everyone.